Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Welcome to Vox Novus, the new voice. We often hear stories of contact with extraterrestrial or extra-dimensional beings. Many of these stories are referred to as frightening abductions, often including involuntary procedures and experiments. Are there those who have had a totally different experience? Positive, educational, and almost familial. My guests this week on Vox Novus, author Preston Dennett and contactee experiencer Dolly Safran, share Dolly's personal story of lifelong positive experience in which her great teachers even taught her to pilot the craft. Preston Dennett first began investigating UFOs in 1986 after learning that his family, friends, and co-workers were having encounters. Since then, he has interviewed hundreds of people and investigated a wide variety of cases. He has written 29 books and more than 100 articles about UFOs and the paranormal. Dolly Safran has worked as a limo driver, assistant manager at Wendy's, a zookeeper, a bus driver, a security guard, a nurse, and more, including as a civilian worker for the U.S. Department of the Treasury and Department of Defense. Her UFO contacts began around age one and are still ongoing today. They join me this week to share Dolly's story and Preston's new book about Dolly, Symmetry, A True UFO Adventure. Please join me in welcoming to Vox Novus, Dolly Safran, and the author who shared her story with the world, Preston Dennett. Welcome.
Hi.
Thank you very much.
How are
Thank you? Thank you both so much for joining me today. Before we share about Symmetry and Dolly's ongoing experiences, I would like for each of you to share about your personal paths, starting with Preston. Preston, you've written 29 books, more than 100 articles, and have numerous television, radio, and podcast appearances, all about UFOs, contact experiences, and the paranormal. What sparked this interest in you, and how did it manifest into this calling?
Well, I can tell you for sure that this was never anything I was looking for. And I absolutely cannot believe where I am today because I was very skeptical. I did not believe in UFOs or really anything paranormal. It was in 1986. I was quite young, 21 years old. Heard a report on the news about a sighting over Alaska. It's a very famous sighting in the UFO literature. But the news report was very short, very tongue-in-cheek. Kind of ridiculing, in fact, about this pilot who said he believed he saw a UFO. But I was intrigued. I thought, wow, this pilot is throwing his career away, which turned out to be true. And it sparked a little bit of an interest in me because my brother, Mark, my older brother, some years earlier had said he'd seen a UFO. I did not believe him at the time. I didn't want to hear about it. But this was enough for me to ask him again. And I was shocked when he gave a very vivid account of seeing a metallic disc, very close up, no noise, 15-minute long encounter where he chased it in his car with his two friends. And I ended up interviewing both of them because Mark's like, well, if you don't believe me, talk to them. And that's how it kind of started. I found out a lot of people in my family, my friends, my coworkers were having encounters. It was not good news as far as I was concerned. I had to really readjust my whole worldview. I was really disappointed to find out there was a UFO cover-up. And I just kind of snowballed from there. I could not let this go and started interviewing people, joined MUFON, was in this field for 10 years, writing about 30 articles before I put out my first book. That was in 1996. And I've been putting out a book or two per year since then. So yeah, this is an important subject. I just can't let it go.
That's a prolific body of work. But I have to ask you, you said other family members, in addition to your brother, And from personal experience and being with other folks who've been in similar situations, it seems to be a family thing. When one person is contacted, others are. Did you ever have an experience?
Yes, I sure did. Not until I started researching it, at least I should say not consciously. But yeah, I've had a good dozen close-up sightings that are not ambiguous, clearly strange, at least one involving, you know, what we now know as missing time. Pretty sure about that, though I can't really recall what happened with the missing time other than this orb approached my car when I was driving in 1992 through Woodland Hills here in Southern California. And it took off, and that's all I really remember. I don't remember driving home. I forgot the whole experience entirely for several months. And yeah, it's absolutely in my family. My sister-in-law has seen grays. My other sister-in-law had humanoid encounters as a child. I have two nephews who had very close-up sightings. One saw a humanoid. So yeah, it's definitely in my family.
So this all changed your world perspective.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, when you hear people you love and trust, and you've known for years, know they're not lying. It is absolutely undeniable that something is going on. It's one thing reading about it. It's another hearing someone you know so well. And it's entirely another when you experience it yourself. So I kind of went full circle there.
Absolutely. Dolly, as major a part as these experiences have been throughout your life, let's start with your down-to-earth story. Tell us about your formative years and relationships and your path as an adult.
Oh, my goodness. Well, my formative years, pretty much I, from early on, I knew I was different. I grew up having ability that not anybody else I knew had. It was a little difficult on me because I didn't have any control of it. I drove my poor mama crazy. She didn't know what to do with me. But we had a good life. I lived on a farm. When I was seven, five, we were on our grandparents' dairy farm in Wisconsin, and love cows. And I've had many experiences moving around. We ended up in Florida permanently and lived out in the Glades. Lots of animals, more cows, more of everything, horses, you name it. I'm a kind of a tomboy. I lived outside mostly, but I love doing schoolwork also, and I loved astronomy, and I took astronomy lessons when I was young. My life was pretty much that of a very strong family background. My father was a good dad. Mom was a good mom, except for she didn't like the UFO stuff. Mm-hmm. We had lots of personal animals. We all raised dogs, showed dogs. My parents made the St. Bernard Club of South Florida a reality. Mm. My dad was in the AIA, American Institute of Architects. He was its president for a couple of years there. Got shown everything and taken everywhere by my father. He used to take me to work a lot and coach me through stuff. Regular school was a little difficult for me. I got bored really, really fast. So they found ways to encourage me and enrich my education outside of school. I had a few friends and I made it to adulthood.
There you
just
go.
Like
so,
that.
So take away the contact experiences. You had a pretty normal upbringing, actually a very rich upbringing.
Yes, very much so. Right.
Okay. All right. Preston, when did you first learn about Dolly and what made her story different from other experiences and contactees that you met and interviewed?
Yeah, I've interviewed quite a few people. So Dolly contacted me in 2016 and was
15.
20. All right. Yeah. It was thereabouts.
There's a lost time.
Oh,
experience
wait, I'm
there.
Sorry. You're right. 2016. I'm sorry. You're right. Okay.
I thought so. At any rate, yeah, she was quite wary and a little cagey at first, about as contactees often are. because I have to deal with a lot of ridicule and skepticism. And she started telling me about her experiences. They very much matched up with what I was hearing from other people. But as we continued to correspond and talk more and more, it became increasingly clear to me that her story was a little bit different from other people. Not so much in the content, because what she was telling me was definitely matching up with what I had heard from many other people. But there were a few major differences. One was that Dolly was not experiencing missing time. She was initially, but since age 14 and onward, she's what I would call a fully conscious contactee. And that's quite rare. I would say maybe two or three or four people I've interviewed are able to remember their experiences in their entirety without the use of hypnotic regression. And even those people that I had interviewed had a real hard time with it for many years, whereas Dolly was quite young, 14, when she sort of woke up, I guess you would say. And as I started doing more interviews with her, which ended up being many hundreds of hours, no kidding, and that's not a hyperbole, it became very clear to me that Dolly's encounters were far more extensive than anyone I'd ever interviewed, ever, or even read about. And she had no fear. And that was another major difference, because there is a lot of fear surrounding this subject. It can be very scary for people initially. Often they will move past that sort of fear barrier. But those were the two main differences. And she did definitely start to say stuff I've never heard before. But most of that I would say, yeah, I have heard, but it was very piecemeal, very broken up, very much looked at through the lens of fear. So she was able to answer a lot of the missing pieces for me, connect the dots, fill in the blanks in terms of who the Grays are, what their agenda is, and so forth. So yeah, it was a few years process of us sort of filling, you know, getting the whole story together.
Dolly, as a conscious contactee, you remember each of these experiences naturally, and unlike others, as Preston mentioned, without the need for regression hypnosis. Please share with us about your first remembered experience.
I was out in the backyard one night, a late school night. I had my telescope up. I was doing homework. I took classes at the Miami Dade Transit Planetarium. And my dad obviously decided it was time for me to pack it down. He said, come in. So I came in, packed down my scope, put my jammies on. I am only a 2 hour a day sleeper. So I would spend a lot of times at night reading or doing stuff. This night, I decided to put my elbows up on the ledge of my window, my big old jalousy windows in Florida, and look up at the sky. Orion was up that night, and I love that constellation. As I was gazing up, I started to see about 100 stars that instantly I realized they weren't stars. They were actually moving around. And I got really excited. I thought, oh, my God, I was trying very hard before this night to remember everything in my life. I was either crazy or I was knew something was happening and I just needed to know. So I started consciously trying to put recall in my mind strongly. I watched it come down out of the atmosphere, two of them. Watched one go east toward the landmark on Kendall Road in Kendall. And I saw the other one come down over our property behind our house. When it got down over our house, I started to see the trees swaying around. No wind that night, clear night, nothing. But they were moving like there was a heavy wind. Couldn't hear anything but the trees rustling and a small background noise in the very back of my hearing. I started to study the craft. I knew it wasn't anything we had. And I was committing it to as much memory as I could. I wasn't going to lose this one, okay? When I got up to the portholes, though, everything changed. I saw two small beings in those windows and they were looking dead at me. I was like, nope. I had a moment there and I just decided, nope, nope. And I turned and I was going to go under my bed for lack of anywhere else to go. And as I made the pivot, the room exploded in blue white light, and I passed out. I woke up hours later on the floor, not in my own jammies, inside out and backwards they were. And I was mad. I was crying. I was upset. I was like, God, I must be nuts to hear my mom in the kitchen. And as I went to the shower, had a shower because it was school, I had to get dressed. And the first inkling that I might have had something happen is those weren't my jammies. And it started to like gel in my mind. Oh, wait a minute. I went in the kitchen. Mom said, make coffee. And I made coffee. And Paul Harvey was on the radio when she was working at breakfast. And I said, Mom, did you hear anything last night? Did you see any lights, anything? She had her back to me and she said, what are you talking about? And I said, well, you know, a UFO. She whirled on me and said, no, which meant my lifetime, nothing. You shut up now. I did. I sat there stewing, trying to think of how I was going to come back at her and get her to talk to me. And the radio changed from Paul Harvey to the news. And the very first thing out of the guy's mouth was, two Deadland police officers saw UFOs last night. And they described it perfectly. One of the police officers in his car got buzzed by the UFO itself. And I became hysterical at that point. I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And I started jumping up and down. I couldn't contain myself. And my mother whirled on me again. And she said, no, you were dreaming. Get out of the kitchen, which meant leave now or die. So I did. My dad met me on the way into the kitchen and he said, calm down, calm down, calm down. I mean, I was really over the top. I realized that I wasn't nuts at that point. And he's like, you got to calm down. You got to calm down. Go calm down. You know, maybe meditate or something. So I went in the only private room in our house, which was the bathroom, shut the door, locked it, turned the light out and sunk to the floor. I sat there thinking I've got to make recall. I have to make recall. This is real. Okay. I started replaying the whole incident in my head incrementally, bit by bit by bit, and telling myself I'm going to remember. And then all of a sudden, boom, out of nowhere, my mind woke up. I don't even know how to explain it. It's surreal. It's like watching yourself in a movie inside your head. And I saw what came down into my room that night. It was the light. And then I was frozen. I couldn't move my body. And this energy ribbon came down. And I saw two beings come down the energy ribbon, those little guys that were in the window. And one took me by the hand and he put his arm around my waist and guided me to the ribbon and then placed my hand up on the ribbon, holding on to me. And we became weightless. And we went up that ribbon. And what startled me is I literally went through the roof of my house. I was shocked. Went through the tree, went up to a craft, that craft, and they had a door open. And he shoved me through it when we got up there. And I sort of landed on my keister inside the craft. And I turned because I felt somebody next to me. And there was a woman sitting there. And that's when my brain totally, totally exploded. I realized who and what and where I was. I was so scared at that moment before I saw the beam and realized what was going on. You know, my memory coming back, I started shaking. I started to get sick to my stomach. She said, do you know who I am? And I'm like, yes, I know who you are. It's a tall gray woman. Or I call her mama. I met her when I was six. And I started remembering. I mean, it was just pouring in on me all at once. And it was such an emotional experience. I heaved, I threw up all over myself. And they helped me get cleaned up. They gave me something to put on. Calm me down and sat me there for a minute. And the next thing I know, I hear a voice in my head and it's a male voice. And he says, hey, how are you doing? You remember me now? And I realized who it was. And it was even almost as dramatic as seeing mama. It was the entity that indwells that craft and runs it. Everything in their technology is psychically run. They don't have anything like we do. They are that advanced. And I nicknamed him when I was young, Talara, because I can't pronounce his full name. It's too long and too hard. And I was like, oh my God. And I was just being swarmed by all these memories that, like, suddenly, I don't know, it's like being in a coma, I think, for people, where you wake up and you know who you are, or you come back from you know where, like you were sleeping, and you just wake up and you just had all of that experience and all that knowledge suddenly in your head. And I started shaking again. And they decided to give me some more time. So the two grays that were with us took me on a tour of the ship and let me ground to it. You know, in other words, touch things that I knew what they were and see where my room, I had a quarter there, quarters, and let me see everything. I mean, they just took me everywhere in this craft and then brought me back and sat me down and Tata says, okay, we're going to go for a ride. And I instantly knew what that meant. We were going to go somewhere. And he said, sit in the seat, which meant sit in the seat. In other words, that's where the pilots sit. And I was like, what am I doing? And he said, you're going to fly. And I'm scared now because, you know, I can't fly this thing. I know how you fly this thing. He said, no, no, we're going to give you a device that'll help you control it. He said, I'll override you if you make a mistake, but I'm going to let you fly the craft. I was like, oh my God. And I said, where are we going? And he said, Saturn. And we left. And we got outside of Saturn, and I had a little astronomy lesson from him. I learned about the rings. I learned about the moons that orbit Saturn and how many of them there are. And that one of the moons actually rotates in the opposite direction of everybody else. It's really cool because Saturn kind of tilts, and it's outside. It's very big, and it's very much outside the elliptical orbit of all the other planets. In other words, even when they're in alignment, Saturn is somewhat away from them, you know, outside of that. It's beautiful. I was in shock, you know, the colors of the everything. I mean, it just sat there. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You know, and he said, OK, we're going to go again. And he sort of took over flying at this point, and he took me to the moon, which is my favorite, you know, body outside of this planet. I've studied it my whole life. And he did a, you know, when you do a spirograph and it does this kind of weird orbit around and it's elliptical, and you get these pretty designs from it. He did one of those. We did it. We went around the moon 8 times, and I got to see all around the moon, and I got to see the backside. I got to see where they actually have a base. I got to see prominences and valleys and outright smudges on the moon. I got to see on the other side, I got to see the orbiter. And he said, okay, we're going to land. And we soft landed. They land very carefully on the moon, so they don't kick up a lot of moon dust and stuff like that. It's too easy to see them that way. And we sat there, and he was very quiet for a time. And he asked me, you know, we're going to have a talk. Okay. And I'm like, okay, it's time. It's you're of an age. I want to have a serious talk with you about what you're going to do with your future. And he says, you probably have some idea which way you want to go. Let's talk about it. Well, at that point in my life, I was studying everything I could get my hands on. I wanted to be a marine biologist. I wanted to be a zoologist. I wanted to be nurse, everything. I was already candy striping at that age. He said, well, he said, I'm going to let you choose. And I want you to think about the fact that we want to work with you. Work for us. And that got me excited. And I was sitting there staring at Mama, who was staring back at me. And it just hit me in the brain pan. I love to fly. Okay. I've been in planes in my youth. My father could fly gliders. I had two uncles who could fly airplanes. I've been up in them one way or another. Been to airports to watch the planes. I've been to NASA to watch it incoming and outgoing. I just love planes. And I looked her dead in the face and said out loud, I want to fly. At that moment, I was taking my life in my own hands because I didn't even think they'd say yes. It was just a crazy thing that I said. And he replied almost instantly, yes, okay, that's what we'll do.
And we're going to pause at that point. You were 14, is that correct at that time?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. We're going to pause at that point, and I'm actually shaking a little bit because some of the stuff that you are relaying right now is something that I closely identify with. We'll talk about that in the second segment. My guests this week on Vox Novus are Preston Dennett and Dolly Safran. We're talking about Dolly's story, featured in Preston's book, Symmetry, A True UFO Adventure. Preston, please tell our listeners where they can get the book and find out more about you.
Yeah. Thank you, Victor. The book is available on Amazon, other online retailers. I do have a website as well. If you punch in my name, it should take you there. The actual address is prestondennett.weebly.com.
And we'll be back with more of Preston and Dolly after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Back on Vox Novus, my guests this week are Preston Dennett and Dolly Safran. We're talking about Preston's book about Dolly's experiences, Symmetry, A True UFO Adventure. Dolly, we share a lot of stuff in common. I remember when I was five, which was in 1958, being visited during the night by beings that I referred to as my teachers. I was not afraid. I had a sense of familiarity, even family with them. I told my parents that I was attending night school in the sky, and they said it was my imagination or that I was dreaming. And I had confirmation from my mother in 2018, 2 years before she passed. I sat her down with her for lunch one day. She was very ill. And I said, she was talking about why she had a certain condition. She had a Parkinson's disease. And she said, why has no one in our family ever had Parkinson's disease? Why do I have? And she also had other autoimmune situations. I said, Mom, when I was a child, you never believed me when I would share stories with you about my contacts. But there are some families who have experienced contact who end up with strange autoimmune conditions. My siblings and I have all experienced non-life-threatening autoimmune conditions. And I said, but you never had any strange experiences, did you? She said, no, except for that time you were about a year old and the hair in the back of your neck starts standing up.
Oh, my.
She says, when you were a year old, it was about, which would have been January, February of 1954. She said, I woke up about 3 a.m. and you were crying. And I got up and went to the kitchen to prepare a bottle for you. And the strange light came through the window. And that's all I remember until the next day. And it took all those years for her to come out and admit it to me and confirm for me what I had known to be the truth. So, and also in 1959, while I was in first grade, there was a book on the classroom shelf called You Will Go to the Moon. And I asked my teacher if I could take it home and read it, and she agreed. And 2 weeks later, when I hadn't brought the book back, she reminded me that it was borrowed, then I have to bring it back. And I said, no, not bringing it back. And she said, why? I said, because it's wrong. She says, what do you mean it's wrong? I said, it's wrong. I've been there. Needless to say, my parents were called in. I was sent for counseling, and I was chalked up to have an overactive imagination. But we both know what really happened. Preston, did any of the experiences that you've researched and interviewed share anything akin to what Dolly and I have shared?
100%. Yes, it's not that unusual. I talked to a guy in West Virginia, Jay Gardner. I think he was 11 years old. UFO landed across the street from his home. He was taken on board and they took him to Saturn. Mm. Showed him Saturn. He recognized it from the picture books at his house. Not unusual. I've heard this before. This actually happened to Raymond Fowler, who is a very well-known researcher. He studied the Betty Andreasen case, wrote several books about it, found out he was a contactee, and has the same memories of going to Saturn. Leo Sprinkle, another researcher. Yes, the moon is even more common. One of my favorite cases that I researched involved Kevin Kamen, a Navy medic, trained observer, who had an encounter where he was actually taken from a Navy ship, met praying mantis type ETs. It was a very benevolent encounter, though somewhat frightening for him. They didn't hurt him. They didn't examine him. It was all just conversations mostly. And they took him around the moon. Same type of thing. I've heard it many times. Many times people being placed into the pilot seat and told how to fly. A young teenager from Louisiana, Tim, they took him up to the control room and said, here's how we do it, and started darting around. And he had the impression that these grays who were explaining things to him were actually quite young, teenagers, so to speak, and were still learning how to fly. So yeah, this may sound unusual to a skeptic, certainly, but I can tell you it's very much a consistent part of the UFO contact experience.
You know, it's interesting. I used to have a recurring dream as a child of being outside of my home and seeing the planet Saturn come out of the sky and approach me.
So, there you go.
Saturn connection. And the other thing, I remember when I was a kid being upset by something, running into my room, sitting on the floor of the closet crying, envisioning sitting at the controls, looking up and saying, take me off this place. I don't belong here. I want to go home.
Oh, wow.
Well, yeah. When I was about 9 years old, I saw a book in the bookstore. I had to get it. And I may have been 12, but young, you know, preteen, which was a tour of the solar system. It became my favorite book. I still have it. And I was just obsessed. I'm like, I need to know about our solar system.
Yeah.
So there's little clues like that that a lot of contactees, I think, have.
Dolly, did you have a sense that you were chosen for this?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I didn't have a sense. I knew. I just knew. In the back of my mind, my entire life, I knew that I was doing something. I had a path I was following, and I had to follow it. I had to choose carefully, and I had to go the way that I was going. And if I felt like I should be doing something, I did it. You know, it was almost like being downloaded with information about things. I seemed to know things and experience things from a different perspective than everybody else. And I knew that I was adding to my knowledge. I was adding to my abilities, and that I needed to hone them well, you know?
Did you have a sense like me that this was not your real home?
Earth yes.
Not your real home?
Yep. Absolutely. I would talk about crying about things. I used to sit under things all the time. My mom had cubby holes and hidey holes all over the place. And I would just go crawl in and ball up and just get me out of here. You know, I'd cry at my window at night sometimes about it too.
I'm taking a pause here for a second just because I'm emotional right now. And I'm sure that, you know, reuniting with someone, as I shared before with you offline, that we have met before, and I'm sure we have now. I have no doubt in my mind that we've met before. And I'm hoping that as the weeks ensue and we develop a friendship, that I will remember and remember consciously. So, Dolly, during my experiences, I asked to learn about science, especially magnetism and radios. While other boys my age in the mid-1950s wanted toy trucks and the like, I wanted parts to build radios and actually built my first radio when I was 6.
Wow.
You had a greater ambition. You wanted to fly. Where did that come from?
I don't know. That's a really good question. The first time I flew was in my uncle's plane, and it was a Piper Cub. And I couldn't get enough of it. I didn't want to get out of the plane. I wanted to go again. Every time we went to an airfield and I got to watch them incoming and outgoing, I just knew. I mean, my whole body was vibrating with it. I just somehow knew that I was going to be doing that, that I could do that. When I was a young woman, after college, I started learning to fly. Actually, I took flight lessons. And the first time out the gate, he took me up, the pilot took me up, and he did a stall to shoot, first thing right out of the bat. And I guess he was trying to scare me to death. That didn't it had a reverse operative reaction out of me. I started screaming, wahoo! And he's like, okay, you're good. I'll teach you how to fly. I just always have wanted to fly. If you can levitate, you want to fly. I really believe that. Okay. I used to fly in my dreams all the time. I used to levitate and fly in my dreams. I've flown in everything in my dreams that you could possibly imagine. It's just an ongoing thirst for that activity. So, yeah.
And what was it like piloting the craft?
You become one with the craft itself. You become one with the entity that's indwelling it. And you see everything from his perspective and he sees everything from mine. It is a cooperative effort. And this craft becomes your body and you are set loose with it, okay? And if I think to make a right turn, I make a right turn. If I think to go down, I go down, up, whatever. But I feel the inertia of it. When you're on craft, you're in an environment that doesn't feel the inertia, okay? But Talat is operating with me and he does feel the outside of the craft and the outside of the fields that we're in. He's a disembodied dimensional being. And he transmit that to me. So I got the feeling of the inertia. I got the feeling of being aloft and landing and all of that. And it's the same thing I experienced as a small child. I just went wild with it. It's, you can't think of anything else while you're flying either. You become the pilot you are flying, you know?
And explain a little more about how the craft operate.
It has a fuel source and batteries. It has a small nuclear furnace in it, very small, and it burns a type of nuclear fuel that is very efficient, has no half-life. It utilizes every bit of that fuel up. It has no waste or waste byproducts coming from it. There's no cleanup. It is so powerful that it produces a graviton wave, and they have emitters that use that graviton wave to emit the wave in a pattern around the craft. There are usually three of them. The bigger the craft, there's more emitters. There's two up above you and one below you, or in facing you actually. And it moves, the emitters move as you move. Like if I think about it, one of the emitters will gyrate around to my command. Talata can do this also. It is very, very efficient, and it requires unbelievable amounts of concentration to do. But once you lock into it, you're good. The emitters become you, you know, it's like me steering. I also have an electromagnetic ball in the seat with me that my movements guide through my mind and one hand. One hand is grounded because I can become electrocuted if I don't do that. And the other hand, actually, I don't touch the ball. But as I move my hand, I can create interdimensional play with the craft. In other words, I can go interdimensional with that ball. In my mind, I have a memory of everywhere I've ever been. I've been taught to go different places by other ET, other drivers who take me there. So I memorize where I've been. I have an eidetic memory for that. I never, ever forget where I've ever been. And so I can remote to that position, and then we go interdimensional and we go through a light doorway, an interdimensional door of light, okay? And then we're there, and I can go 280 million light years away and in a half a second, less than. My seat on craft, it depends on what craft I'm on. The craft that I yet generally fly, I don't have a what you would call a Faraday cage over me. The smaller the craft, got to have one. And I sit in a Faraday cage. And that's literally to protect me from the electromagnetic fields that are surround me while I run that ball. That ball is powerful stuff. I do take a lot of electricity anyway. I mean, I'm constantly feeling the electricity along my skin and stuff. I'm actually kind of hairless now. I don't shave ever anymore because I don't have to. I've lost almost all my hair. I have like a little bit of a baby down left, and that's even falling out now. And my hair's thinned out on my head now. And I fully expect to go bald soon, you know?
just for those who are not familiar with the concept of a Faraday cage, please explain that.
It's a cage that takes the electricity and the magnetism around it and grounds it out. And the craft has a singular, they have a when you're in the craft, you can see a singular column going up the middle, and it starts wide and it goes thinner and then it gets wider at the top. That's the ground out, and it sends it out to the field when we're flying, so that I'm grounded. I can't be electrocuted to death by it.
Right. For those familiar with the Curse of Skinwalker Ranch, they have a metallic sphere outside of their headquarters, which they refer to as a Faraday cage. And when anyone is experiencing the purported magnetic anomalies that happen on the ranch, they go into that cage, and it stops headaches and stops the things from the physical effects from affecting these folks. And that's what the Faraday cage is about. Yep. That's fascinating. That's really fascinating. In addition to Saturn and the moon, what were some of the other places you flew to?
Oh, I have been, I've watched supernovas. The last one that I was privy to see required traveling to the time that it exploded. And it was in the Delphi, you know, system. And watched that from a really good safe distance, but we got to see it happen as it happened. It was kind of interesting because when I came back, they put me back where I, minutes after I left, and it actually, we got to see it like, I don't know, 6 or 7 months later after I saw it. So I saw it from two different perspectives. I have that in my head. It's really weird. Okay. I've been to actually a planet in Delphi in that system. That's a water world. I've been to, different places in our galaxy. I've been to Zeta Reticuli. I've been to the Orion cluster. There are planets there. The grays are from one of those planets. I've seen billions and billions of stars. Okay, I can't even add them up to you. You know, you get a view of a long view of what you're looking at, and you're just like, oh my God! I've been outside our galaxy. I've been across the universe, and I've been on a what you call a planetoid or a Dyson sphere, you would call it, and it's very, very big. It's bigger than anything you can imagine. And it's a beautiful world. It's got water, three different water features in it, ocean, lakes, like the Great Lakes. It's got brackish water, you know, like where the sea meets the fresh water. And it's because it's holding all these different animals, fish, you know, flora, fauna, all of it. It's a transport for all of that. And it's also a place for everybody to take it easy, have your ship worked on, study, whatever, meet and greet, whatever. It's just a depot in space, and they have several of them.
Wonderful. Preston, Dolly and I have shared positive experiences. You've interviewed others who have also had powerful and wonderful positive experiences, but many others refer to their contact experience as abduction. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, I came into this field and sort of bought into what I would call the ET threat narrative. There is a lot of fear surrounding this subject, but there's also disinformation. And the media loves anything lurid, scary, and that sort of thing. And I started getting cases of healing very early on. So I started to take a real closer look at what people were actually experiencing when they were taken on board, because many of the people I talked to were very much frightened by what was happening to them. And some felt that this was distinctly negative. They did not want it. They wish it would stop. And after, you know, it took me many years of interviewing people, because what I found is initially when someone starts having experiences as a young child, you know, age 4, 5, 6, 7, it's usually not scary. Kids are very non-judgmental, very accepting of events, even if they are strange. But coming into the teenage years and as a young adult, this is when people do start to have a very strong fear response. And when someone is scared, they immediately, I mean, it's an unpleasant feeling. No one really likes to be in terror. And they will immediately label their experience as negative. And I asked them, well, what actually happened to you? And they said, well, you know, I was pulled out of my room. I was laid out on a table, undressed. There were these beings that looked very different, very scary. And they fight the experience. And when this happens, the fear that's coursing through a person, I think, distorts your perception to a certain degree. And it's clear to me that ETs are not trying to scare people, because the first thing they always say is, do not be afraid. Have no fear. No harm will come to you. You will not be hurt. This is the most common phrase, period. I hear it from pretty much every single contactee without exception. And I started to really look at this. I'm like, okay. And the scariest thing I hear is this physical examination. And I think that's understandable. No one really likes going to a doctor. As Dolly will tell you, as a nurse, and I've talked to other people, people will fight you when you're actually, you know, trying to be helped.
Yeah.
So this is the problem. People have a lot of fear. And people who do not have a strong fear response, or at some point get over it, and they often do, not always, they are treated differently. They are not paralyzed. Their memories are not suppressed. They're not given screen memories, so to speak. They're given free rein of the craft. Dolly describes being taken of a tour of the craft. I hear that all the time, especially from people who sort of gotten past their fear. What happens when someone's taken on board follows a very set pattern. You're physically examined. They will give you a little talking to, saying, how are you doing? What is going on with your life? They will take you to the engine room, show you how the craft works. I hear that many times. Most often, people will be taken to an observation deck sort of thing and shown star fields, the moon, Saturn. Most often, I would say, just above Earth and looking down at Earth from some distance. That I hear all the time. They will take you to the control room and say, here's how we fly. Would you like to try it? And lastly, it would be messages. And this is also very, very consistent. And this is when I started to really look at this, like, they are trying to help us. Because the messages are, what are you doing with nuclear proliferation? This is not wise. Don't pollute your planet. Your warlike ways are leading to self-destruction.
Yeah.
Greed and corruption. There's a very strong spiritual aspect to this.
And we're going to touch upon that in our next segment. My guests this week are Preston Dennett and Dolly Safran. We're talking about Symmetry, a true UFO adventure. We'll be back with more after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Back on Vox Novus, my guests this week, Preston Dennett and Dolly Safran. We're talking about Preston's book about Dolly's experiences called Symmetry, a true UFO adventure. Dolly, it does not take a genius IQ to recognize that our world is in big trouble, perhaps more so than any time in modern history. What have your teachers, your friends told you about what is going on today?
I've known this my whole life. I grew up knowing it. I've studied it my entire life. I'm very well versed in it. Our planetary system, our solar system, is undergoing at this time a polar excursion. In other words, our sun has already changed its polarity, which it does every so many years. When it does so, it ignites the polarity change of every planet in our system. Everything that's got a magnetosphere and poles, it will change them. About 80 years ago, it began for us, and ours was very, very slow, very, very slow. It is now rapidly coming to its conclusion. We're at the apex of it happening. During this time, our magnetosphere has slowly been degrading, and it is now at its worst moments. Because of that, we're not being protected from all the gamma radiation that's coming from space. And we've been pelted with it for a great deal of time. If you wonder what all the cancer, autoimmune disorders, autism, all of it, every human ailment that has exploded in the last 40, 50 years is due to gamma radiation. ET's encounters with us, the reason that we are contactees is that they're helping to hold us up because there's a plan. Because it's not just the poles that are changing, that's the problem. While our magnetosphere is down, our sun has now come into its 12,000 year cycle. We also have a 6,000 year cycle that's coinciding with it and an electromagnetic current sheet that's coming through our galaxy at the same time. This is a triple threat. This means that any coronal mass ejections that come off our sun are life-threatening to us. They will. They can down our grid in a matter of seconds. It would take an X-class CME with the coronal hole and a couple other factors factoring in, which are all occurring already, magnify that about 100 times, and you will see us pelted right back to the Stone Age. They're looking for that to happen in about 2.5 years within that time frame. And unfortunately, it could happen anytime, actually, because our sun is now doing things that have even got ET scratching their heads. Whoa. Okay. It's not over after that. After we go back to the Stone Age, about 8 to 10 years after that, we're going to experience a micronova. We have micronovaed before. It is massively large. If you want proof of it, there are cave paintings that actually depict what a micronova looks like, and it's in the Bible. It's almost in every religious composition about end times. That is going to end life on this planet. Nobody will survive that. No animal, no nothing. And ET comes at those times and takes everybody and everything off it that they can get off the planet. It's not a horror that you would think of in that we all do recycle. We are infinite beings. We never really die. Our bodies are just a shell that we dwell in while we're here. We cast it off and move on. And so what they're looking to do is get everybody off who's willing to make the trip, who's ready for it, who can open up their minds, you know, use their innate abilities, learn to use them, and go with them. This is the situation. To do so, to make that trip with them, you have to wait until after the micronova, though, because our magnetosphere is so far down that all our electromagnetic field lines that are surround us are wacko, and they can't fly now. They've been out of here for a little over a year, about a year and a half. They bugged out. They do have drones that can fly right now, and they do observe everything. They have bigger sentinels that are watching our solar system and us, and they will know the moment everything goes on and occurs. They're extremely psychic beings, and they can be in contact with us remotely by OBE and by remote view. Preparing for this is immensely important, and we're at a time, if you look what's going on around the world, you got to ask yourself a couple of questions. One of them is, what do the world governments know about this? I can tell you absolutely with impunity that they've known about it from the beginning and they've been preparing. We can add up all the facts. We can add up a seed depository up in the north, you know, Norway up in there, underground bases that are meant for survival all over the globe. And now you can prove it to yourself by wondering, why all the genocide? Why are we suddenly getting all these diseases out of nowhere? Why are governments falling down and allowing people to go at each other? Why are they sowing discord between human beings? What's the problem? And it is absolutely, we're in their way. Because when that micronova happens, we will be a problem, especially those of us that are armed with guns, because we will fight them for it. Those of you who aren't prepared for it, need to eat, have a house, will go down and where they're at and try to get in, and they won't let you. And they would really rather not deal with that, so they have a plan. This is their agenda, point blank. That's it.
Will we ever learn to love one another?
I hope so. I know that I'm running into more and more people every day that have figured this out, okay? People are opening their minds. ET is broadcasting. The universe is broadcasting. This is it, people. Wake up, okay? You got to make contact. the governments of the world have treated us like slaves. They've broken humanity down all over the globe. They've thrown you negativity. They've thrown you hate. They've thrown you fear. They've thrown you everything possible to keep you from making that connection. And all ET's message is, and this is the one that I'm giving, this is it. Wake up. Use your innate abilities. Find your psychic abilities. Use them. Meditate. Turn off all negativity around you. Quit watching TV. Quit watching movies. Quit watching all the negative influences, the news, all of it. Quit listening to the governments. They lie. Okay? Stop it. Find peace in your life. Make amends with yourself. Find your community. Gather together. Prepare. Get together and see what it's really all about. Your psychic ability teaches you love. Your psychic ability teaches you truth. They don't want you to know it. You need to find it now. It's time.
May humanity learn this lesson. My guests, Preston Dennett, Dolly Saffron. Preston's book about Dolly's experiences, Symmetry, a True UFO Adventure. Preston, one more time, please share with our listeners where they can get your books and find out more about you and your work.
Yeah, thank you very much. My books are available on Amazon and other online retailers, bookstores near you. My website is prestondennett.weebly.com. I also have a growing YouTube channel where I'm putting out my research. I'm on other social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And yeah, this is a great time to be alive. My advice to people would be just leave fear behind, have fun, enjoy life. And like Dolly says, work on yourself. Don't look to our government for answers. The answers are within you.
I think that is a wonderful message that everyone who listens to this program can resonate with. My gratitude to Preston Dennett and Dolly Saffron for joining us today. Thank you both. And thank you for joining us on Vox Novus. I'm Victor, the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.